This is John chapter 20, starting at verse 11. Now Mary stood outside the tomb crying. As she wept, she bent over to look into the tomb and saw two angels in white seated where Jesus' body had been, one at the head and the other at the foot. They asked her, "Woman, why are you crying?" "They have taken my Lord away," she said, "and I don't know where they have put him." At this, she turned around and saw Jesus standing there, but she did not realize that it was Jesus. He asked her, "Woman, why are you crying? Who is it that you are looking for?" Thinking he was the gardener, she said, "Sir, if you have carried him away, tell me where you have put him, and I will get him." Jesus said to her, "Mary." She turned toward him and cried out in Aramaic, "Rabboni," which means teacher. Jesus said, "Do not hold on to me, for I have not yet ascended to the Father. Go instead to my brothers and tell them, I am ascending to my Father and your Father, to my God and your God." Mary Magdalene went to the disciples with the news, "I have seen the Lord." And she told them that he had said these things to her. Please be seated.
What would have been your reaction if you had gone to the tomb and realized it was empty?
Oh my goodness.
What?
Oh my God, what is my Lord?
No.
Yeah. Oh, in God.
Easter Sunday, the resurrection, the belief, the knowledge that Jesus is alive.
The part of the Easter story that I find the most impactful is the amount of pain that Jesus went through for us.
I can't even picture it. I can't imagine it and how, just how much that took out of him.
He had the highest position in glory, and yet he stooped to save us. That makes me so happy.
Yeah, I just like the image of Jesus and then the two prisoners on either side of him and Jesus telling him, "I tell you the truth, today you will be with me in paradise."
I think the Palm Sunday story is actually quite beautiful because I like the imagery of people laying down all these palms and coats and just the reverence that everyone has for Jesus as he's walking down on a donkey. I think it's cool.
Especially the story of Mary, like seeing Jesus and not realizing who he is, and then like having that moment of realization. And yeah, I think that's my favorite part.
Well, you know, it's actually Good Friday. The thing that's just so gripping, it's very emotional to think Jesus died on a cross for me. And it's like this declaration, "I love you."
The resurrection of Christ means that I don't have to fear death.
I think Christ's resurrection has impacted everything about the way that I live.
Hopefully it's impacted every piece of how I live. That's my goal.
It shows just how much he was, considering just how broken I can get from time to time and how much he's still wanting that relationship with me no matter how many times I've been failing.
It's only been because of the hope in Jesus that I have actually made it through.
It's changed the way that I watch things and the music I listen to and even some of the books I read.
I have hope for everybody, even the ones who have given up, hope for other people.
Oh, and he healed me. If it wasn't for Jesus Christ, I wouldn't be here. Like, Jesus
rising and knowing that he's in heaven preparing a place for me is just amazing, that someone would do that for me.
It's incredible, his love for us.
Sin is conquered, and through that there is freedom, and Jesus chose that willingly.
So if we have peace, we have joy, and if we have peace, we have hope, and peace, we have love. I'm sure that love to somebody, because that love comes from Jesus.
It's because of his defeating death in the grave that I'm alive and that we are all alive in him.
If he has power over death, he has power over the circumstances we find ourselves in daily.
Think of, oh, I should have done this better, or I'm doing this wrong, I'm not doing enough. And I just picture Jesus saying, I already died for that.
God is love. And he opens his arms up to us and says, come to me, I love you. Yeah.
That his life was worthy because he gave us life through his life.
But it's the resurrection. It's a happy ending to a sad story.
It's impacted my life. It's impacted everyone's lives. And I'm looking around here right now, and we wouldn't have this without Jesus.
Jesus loves me.
Wow, it's good to be in God's house this morning, isn't it? Well, let's give him some praise. Jesus is King. He's alive. Lift your voice. Let him know. Let him know that you love him. Man, it's just beautiful to hear those stories. It's a reminder that what we're talking about today, what we're immersing ourselves in, is not just some story that has relevance 2,000 years ago, but that it's a story that can intersect each and every one of our lives, and it has power to change lives today. And you just heard a whole bunch of that in this little video, and I'm just excited to open up the scriptures with you and show you from them the power that Jesus' resurrection has to change your life. And so, if we haven't met, my name's David. I'm one of the pastors here. Man, I'm just so privileged to be a part of what God is doing in this place. And it's a great day. It's a great day to be in the presence of God. It's a great day to be in the house of God, because today what we've been doing is, in this Easter series, is we've been looking at the words of Jesus, and we've been primarily looking at the words of Jesus from the cross, the words that he spoke as he was dying on the cross, and we were pulled into the wonder and the beauty and the horror and just the gravity of what Jesus did for us in the lead up to today. But today our focus is on words that Jesus is speaking outside a garden tomb, words that truly are louder than a grave, words that have power. And the word that Jesus speaks today is one word, simple word. It's just a name, but it's the word Mary. Mary. Can you say that with me? Mary. Such a simple word. It's just a name, and yet this is the word that opened Mary's eyes to see the reality of the resurrected Jesus. It was the word that enabled Mary to see what she could not see on her own. And I'm believing that the same Jesus that spoke to Mary on a day in history in a garden tomb outside the city of Jerusalem, that same Jesus is here, and he is still speaking today, and he is going to call each and every one of us by name and open our eyes to see the beauty and the wonder of the resurrection. So are you with me today? So let's jump into John chapter 20. Jesus is, he's been dead for 3 days. This is 3 days after he was crucified. On a Friday, he was killed, and he was buried in a tomb. And for 3 days, he has rested in that tomb. As Nathan alluded to, it's Silent Saturday. There was just darkness. There was silence. But then on this Sunday, John brings us into resurrection morning, where the sound of resurrection bursts out into the world. And we read these words starting in verse 11. Now Mary stood outside the tomb crying. As she wept, she bent over to look into the tomb and saw two angels in white seated where Jesus' body had been, one at the head and the other at the foot. They asked her, "Woman, why are you crying?" "They've taken my Lord away," she said, "and I don't know where they have put them." So there's two things to take note of right away. The first one is that this is a new day. Every one of the New Testament writers that wrote the gospel stories, in every one of their resurrection accounts, they begin it with saying that this was the first day of a new week. We see that in John chapter 20, verse 1, that this is the day that marks a new beginning. Something new has happened. It's the first day of a new age in history. Something has happened that's changed everything and started to make all things new. Now, I'm a huge C.S. Lewis fan. Did you guys know that? I haven't quoted him in like a week, and so I'm going to do it again. But in C.S. Lewis's Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe, the first book in his Chronicles of Narnia, the story begins with it being always winter but never Christmas. Sounds like a pretty tough place. It's always winter. That the White Witch, she has got this stranglehold on the world of Narnia, that she has made it cold and icy and winter at all times, but it's never Christmas. There's ice everywhere. Everything is cold, hard as stone. There's little life. People are living in despair. This is how the story begins in the Chronicles of Narnia. But then Aslan arrives. But then Aslan arrives, and the power of winter gets broken, and spring comes to Narnia. The ice begins to melt. The snow that's on the trees starts to disappear, and you get to see the green trees again. Flowers begin to bloom. You hear birds chirping and singing once again. They had been silent for a long time, but now they're singing once again. And promises that were made long ago are now coming true. Wrong will be made right when Aslan comes in sight. At the sound of his roar, sorrows will be no more. When he bares his teeth, winter meets its death. And when he shakes his mane, we shall have spring again. So what Lewis is doing is he's pulling on resurrection themes here. And John is doing the same thing. On this day, the first day of the new week, the world has come out of a long winter and it is spring at last. And it has something to do with this empty tomb in a garden and what God has done there. And John, he's going to hint at this by telling us about two angels who are in the tomb. They're sitting in the place where Jesus' body had been laid. Now, angels are supernatural beings created by God. They act as his messengers. They serve God. And their presence in the tomb is John's way of saying that God has been at work in this tomb, that what has happened in this tomb is not the hands of a human, is not the power of humanity, it is the power of God breaking in and pouring out in this tomb. Something has happened here, God's power has intervened, and nothing will ever be the same. And Mary, she's going to understand all of this in a moment, but first, on this new day, we find her weeping. So this day is not just a new day. This day begins with weeping. In verse 11, it says, "Now Mary stood outside the tomb crying as she wept." This is not a pretty cry. This is weeping. This is Mary grief-stricken. Her heart is heavy with sadness. The one who healed her and gave her hope has died, and now she has come to the tomb to be near to him, and his body is nowhere to be found, and it is just too much for her. It's so much to bear, and there's the grief and the sadness of all of that just bears down upon her, and she is weeping in distress and sadness. And the grief is so big in this moment for Mary because Jesus radically changed Mary's life. If you read one of the other gospel accounts, Luke tells us that Mary, before Jesus came into her life, Mary was oppressed by seven evil spirits, that she had lived under the bondage of darkness and evil for a long time. And then Jesus showed up in her life and he cast those demons out and set her free. That Jesus had healed Mary, that he had set her free, he had given her a new life. And Mary had put all her hope on Jesus. She had put all her trust in Jesus. She had given her life to Jesus, and her healer and the one that she had put her hope in is no longer there. He has died and she cannot find his body. And so this day begins with weeping and with a heavy heart. But it's not going to end that way because look at this in verse 14. At this, Mary turned around and saw Jesus standing there, but she did not realize that it was Jesus. He asked her, "Woman, why are you crying? Who is it you are looking for?" So here's the answer why the tomb is empty. It's because Jesus is alive. Hallelujah is right. Jesus is alive. On Friday, he went to a place of death. He died on the place called Skull Hill. He was buried in this tomb. And now he stands outside the tomb, resurrected to a new physical life and alive. Death wasn't able to keep Jesus. It wasn't able to keep him down. The grave could not contain him. Jesus is alive. And Peter, one of Jesus' inner circle, Peter writes about this 40 days later. Peter was at the tomb just before this. He saw the same thing Mary did, but he chose to leave while Mary stayed and lingered at the tomb. That's significant. We'll talk about that in a bit. But this is what Peter writes or says. He stands up and he's speaking about Jesus. He says, "This man, Jesus, was handed over to you by God's deliberate plan and foreknowledge." So this is not something that surprised God. This is not something that just happened. This was God's plan. His plan was always that Jesus would die on a cross and take the punishment that we deserved on himself, that was always the plan. He says, "And you," pointing to the people there, "with the help of wicked men, put him to death by nailing him to the cross. But God raised him from the dead, freeing him from the agony of death, because it was impossible for death to keep its hold on him." I think the two greatest words in the English language are "but God." Like, they really are the most amazing two words you will ever hear. Jesus died on a Friday, but God raised him to life. Why? Because it was impossible for death to keep its hold on him. That's the power, my friends, of living in a story whose main title is "but God." I hit rock bottom and I had no way out, but God reached down into the pit and he pulled me out and gave me something new. I lost everything I cared about. It was gone. I was all alone. I had nothing, but God was with me. He didn't abandon me. I hurt the people I love most, but God's love for me never changed. My marriage was on life support, but God brought it back to life. I didn't have the money to buy groceries or put food on the table, but God. I thought my relationship with my kids or grandkids was forever broken and would never be healed, but God. I lost hope that anything would ever change, but God. But God is two of the best words you will ever hear. Amen. And on this day, it seemed like death had won and hope was lost. But God raised Jesus to life because it was impossible for death to contain the power of God to resurrect anything. The barrier between us and God has forever been torn down because of the resurrection. The power of sin and death has been broken because of what God did on a day in history. The way to life as it was always meant to be experienced and lived has been reopened by the resurrection. Our access to the person and presence of God has been restored, all because death could not keep Jesus in the grave. And Mary is the first person to experience the reality of the resurrected Jesus. This new day, this new hope, this new reality that has burst into the world on this Sunday, Mary is experiencing it for herself. It's unfolding right before her eyes, but she's unable to see it. She needs her eyes to be opened. See, it says that she didn't recognize it was Jesus. She didn't realize that it was Jesus standing before her. This is a normal part of the resurrection accounts, is that at first people don't recognize Jesus. See, the resurrection of Jesus is a historically grounded reality. There's copious amounts of evidence for the fact that Jesus rose from the grave on a day and time in history. But it is not history that is able to give us spiritual sight, give us eyes to see the resurrected Jesus, the reality of who he is. History can help us move closer to faith, but it can't produce faith. The evidence that there is for the resurrection can move us closer to faith, but it can't give us faith in the reality of the risen Jesus. Only God can give us eyes to see the reality of the resurrected Jesus. And so the tomb is evidence for the resurrection, but it's not enough. Mary thinks Jesus is the gardener. She has no idea that it's actually the risen Lord. And this is all over the resurrection accounts, is that people don't like experience that this is Jesus, the resurrected Jesus. And it's not because Jesus is a ghost or he's some a vision. It's because his body is the same yet somehow different. Like Jesus was raised physically from the dead. It's a bodily resurrection, but it's a transformed body. And so sometimes scholars say that the reason why people couldn't recognize him is because Jesus was different, like he had a resurrected body. And so there's this journey that has to happen for people to actually see the reality of Jesus. So evidence helps, but it is an encounter with the resurrected Jesus that will open our eyes to truly see. And Jesus is going to do that. He's going to give Mary spiritual sight. And he starts by having a conversation with her. He says, "Woman, why are you crying? Who are you looking for?" Now, woman is not a derogatory term, okay? This is a cultural way of addressing people at this day and age. And so here it is like Jesus saying, "Dear woman, what's wrong? Who are you looking for?" And it's interesting because Jesus starts by calling her woman. And if you notice in verse 16, he doesn't call her woman. He actually calls her by name. And that's when Mary's eyes get opened. That's when she sees it's Jesus. Verse 16, Jesus said to her, "Mary." She turned toward him and cried out in Aramaic, "Rabboni," which means teacher. So when Jesus calls Mary by name, that is what unlocks her sight. Now she sees that it's Jesus. Now that she knows it's the resurrected king standing before her, that's when everything breaks open in this story. Sorrow is turned into joy. Weeping becomes worship. Hope that died is resurrected. Eyes that couldn't see now see. This is the power that is in Jesus calling you by name. See, his voice had power to call Mary out of darkness into light. His voice has power to cast out evil and make darkness tremble. His voice has power to comfort and to bring peace where there is none. His voice has power over death itself, and it has the power to give spiritual sight. It can remove the veil. When Jesus calls you by name, it can remove the veil, and you'll be able to see what you couldn't see before. This day began with weeping, but it's ending in joy because Jesus opened Mary's eyes by calling her by name, Mary. And in her joy, Mary runs to Jesus and she grabs a hold of him. And the Gospels say she's worshiping him. And she's like, "I'm never going to let you go, Jesus. I thought I lost you, but I'm going to cling to you. I'm going to hold on to you with everything I have." And then Jesus does this weird thing and says, "Don't stay here with me." Verse 17. He's like, "Things are changing. Remember how I told you that I have to go back to be with the Father? I'm going to send the Holy Spirit. Things are changing. How you relate to me are changing. I'm on my way to the Father. It's not going to be the same as it was. Now is not the time to stay in the garden with me. Now is the time to go and share what you have seen and experienced." My brother went to school at the University of Cambridge. And one night, this was before I would keep my phone in a different room at nighttime. But one night I hear my phone ringing in the middle of the night. And I look at it, it's Peter, and I'm like, he never calls me in the middle of the night, so I pick up. And he doesn't even say hello, he goes, "Dave, I'm here with the Queen." And I'm like, "Who, the Queen? Like, what do you mean the Queen? It's like one of your friends?" He's like, "No, Queen of England, Queen Elizabeth." And I'm like, "What?" And he's like, yeah, she's visiting Cambridge, she's right here. "Dave, she's so tiny." And then he goes, "Okay, I love you, Dave, bye," and then he hangs up. That was the phone call. I don't know, I still like, we laugh about it now, but here's the thing. My brother was in the presence of royalty and he just had to share it. It was like, he didn't care how he sounded, he didn't care that he used the right words, he didn't care that he was waking me up at 2 a.m. He was in the presence of royalty and he had to share it. Mary's the same. She is in the presence of royalty, the king of all creation. The resurrection is proof that Jesus is who he says he is. And that his ascension, Nathan's going to talk about that next week, it means that he is seated on a throne, ruling and reigning as creation's king right here, right now. The resurrection is proof of that. And Mary's in the presence of royalty and she just runs and she goes to tell her brothers in verse 18. She says, "I've seen the Lord. This is what he told me. He's going back to the Father. All he said is coming true." What a moment. What a day. See, the resurrection breaks all our boxes and it calls us to respond in worship and faith. See, this is not just a nice story, but it is the truth and power that can change your life. See, Mary's story can be our story too. See, Mary represents two types of people who are probably in the room today. The first person is the heavy-hearted. To the heavy-hearted person, the resurrection says your sorrow can become joy, that your pain can be healed, that the grief that you carry can be lifted, that the things that are weighing you down and burdening you today can be transformed through the resurrection of Jesus. And so the invitation to the heavy-hearted is you got to bring your pain and your burdens, the grief and the sadness, to the empty tomb, and you need to put those in there, and then you need to allow Jesus to give you the resurrected life, to lift the weight of what you are carrying and give you freedom. To the searching, the resurrection says you can find what you're looking for in Jesus. See, notice that when Jesus is talking to Mary, he asks her, who are you looking for? It's not, what are you looking for? He says, who are you looking for? See, Jesus knows Mary is looking for him. I mean, he knows that because he's Jesus. I mean, he's just been raised to life from death, and he can appear out of nowhere. He can put two and two together. He's pretty smart. But here's what Jesus knows about what it means to be human. He knows that underneath all our searching, all our striving, all the looking, all the finding, trying to fill up those empty places in our life, we are not searching for a what, we are searching for a who. We're searching for him. See, Jesus is pointing out to Mary that she is not going to find what she's looking for in the tomb. Tombs are places of death. You go to a tomb to visit the dead, to find dead things. And you don't find the resurrected Jesus in a tomb because he's alive. And so we're celebrating baptism today. Yeah, come on. And every person who is being baptized today has experienced a death with Jesus. They went to a tomb and they were buried, they died, they were buried there with Jesus, but God raised them to life with Jesus so that they might experience new life. That's what we're encountering when we come into the waters of baptism, is that as they go under the water, it's like, I have died with Christ and I've been raised to new life because of Christ. Baptism is for those who have joined Jesus in his death and burial. They've shared his tomb, but not just his death, they've been raised to newness of life. And here's the thing, what they've experienced, every single person in this room can experience. The way has been opened. The pathway has been set by Jesus. And so you might be here today and you might be searching, you might be looking for life and money, achievement, relationships, recognition, titles, experiences, the next momentary high, but none of it is going to deliver, not in a lasting way. And if you keep putting your trust in those dead things, what's going to end up happening is you're just going to need more money, more achievement, a better relationship, a bigger achievement. And it's never going to be enough. Let me tell you, you're going to spend your life on a treadmill, running yourself to death, but you can come today to an empty tomb. You can die with Jesus and be raised to newness of life because there is a God who loves you and he calls you by name. Whatever your name is, Jesus calls you by your name today. He's calling you home. Stop searching. He is here calling you by name. You are not just another face in the crowd to Jesus. You are not just one person in a sea of a billion people that is just unknown and anonymous to Jesus. The God of the universe sees you. He knows you. He loves you, and he is calling you by name. To think that the God of the universe knows your name and loves you and is calling you and saying, come home to me. And he wants to open your eyes to see the reality of his resurrection today. What a gift. The resurrected Jesus is here calling out your name. He's inviting you to come. So don't just admire Jesus. Worship him. He's the king. Don't just assent intellectually to the reality of the resurrection. Give your life to Jesus. Give everything to Jesus because he is alive. Hope is here. And if that is true, then, well, it changes everything. He's calling you by name.